The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
My wife, Pamela, almost gave up on life when our family doctor told her that she would never be able to have children. I could see how her heart shattered into pieces, so we decided to adopt, to give our life a new beginning. We traveled to the children's home in Long Island. My colleague gave me the address. The moment we reached the location, an old woman came to greet us. She took us inside the house where we could see children playing and laughing in joy. I was overwhelmed with the moment and started to interact with every kid running around me. While doing so, my eyes went to the long corridor around the living room, and I saw Pam standing beside a little boy. They were both standing near the window and watching the views outside. I walked to them and said, "Who's this, Pam?" "Danny and I both love to look out the window, don't we, Dan?" "Yes, there's so much to see." That was the moment I realized that she had found what she was looking for. We filled out the forms and brought Daniel home. Daniel had wide blue eyes and dark black hair. He was a very calm and quiet kid, which you don't usually see for kids in his age. The entire ride home, he kept staring at the road. He didn't talk unless he was asked to. I don't know why his manners were too mature for his age. One other odd thing was his records. The orphan keeper told us that someone left Daniel on their doorstep when he was just a baby. So basically, they have no idea about his parents or bloodline. But Daniel was adopted twice before, and in both cases, trouble followed him. He was first adopted by a family who abused him and kept him locked in the basement for months. When the cops rescued him, he was found severely malnourished and had wounds all over his body. He was provided with medical care and special attention till he turned 4, and another family showed interest in adopting him. This time, the orphanage ran a full check on this family, and it was said that they were a lovely couple. But unfortunately, within the next few months, they died in a terrible house fire. Daniel was saved somehow as he hid in the basement. Pam and I both felt bad for him and decided to love him with everything. But the moment he stepped into our house, weird things started to happen. One morning, I woke up very early, probably around 5:30, to go for a run. I was tying my shoelaces standing near the stairs when I heard a sound from the kitchen. I went to the kitchen and saw Daniel washing his hands. "When did you wake up?" He looked at me like he had seen a ghost. Then suddenly, his face became expressionless, and he went back to washing his hands. Once he was done, he wiped his hands on a kitchen towel and walked past me without saying a single word. It all happened so unexpectedly that I didn't know what to say. After he left, I looked at the kitchen sink and found a white feather that probably belonged to a pigeon or some other kind of bird. I also found the back door open. I came outside and searched the entire backyard, expecting something suspicious, but couldn't find anything. I didn't tell Pam about this. Dan behaved as if nothing happened, so I didn't interrogate him any further. 2 days later, I took him to the city park so that he could interact with the neighborhood kids. I sat down on the bench and watched him walking to the swing. He was about to sit on one of the swings when a taller kid came and pushed him away. I immediately ran towards him to handle the situation. I was expecting Daniel to fight back, but instead, he slowly got up, wiped the dirt off of his face, and said something very disturbing to the other kid. He grinned in a very creepy way and said, "I'd love to get rid of you and then watch the worms eat you slowly." A cold shiver ran down my spine hearing him say that. When we came home, I wanted to talk to Pam about what just happened at the park. I was looking for her all over the house when I heard her voice in the backyard. "Andrew, are you guys home?" I went there and found Pam dragging a dead pigeon from the ground. The bird's neck was broken, and it had started to rot. A foul stench was in the air. "What the hell is that?" "I was mowing the lawn when I found this dead bird buried behind this tree. It's weird how it ended up here." Daniel's grinning face flashed right in front of my eyes, and I recalled this morning when he was washing his hands. I went close to Pam and said, "Pam, I think there's something wrong with this kid. Today at the park..." "What? What are you saying? Do you think a 5-year-old did this? How could you even say that, Andrew? He's our son. I know, but you won't believe what he said to this kid today. I feel like we should call the orphanage and find out more information about Daniel. There's something not right."
"Mommy, is everything all right?"
I turned back and found Daniel standing behind me with his expressionless face. He was staring dead into my eyes like I made him angry. Pamela ignored my words and went inside with him. I couldn't sleep that night. I slowly got up and went to check on him. I opened the door to his room, but he wasn't there.
"Is there anything you want to ask me, Daddy?"
Shaken with a sudden scare, I turned back and saw Daniel standing at some distance from me. He had his hands behind his back. His eyes were wide, and the blue eyeballs looked scarier than ever.
What are you doing up so late?"
"Don't you like me, Daddy?"
"What? No. I mean, why would you say that?"
"Then why would you want to get rid of me?"
"Daniel, I never said that. Go to your bed. Now."
"I can smell your fear, Daddy."
Saying this, he came at me at full speed with a huge kitchen knife that he was hiding behind him. It all happened so unexpectedly that before I could defend myself, Daniel lunged at me and stabbed me in the foot. I collapsed on the floor, screaming in pain. Blood started to flow out deep from my cut. Pam came out hearing my scream, and Daniel began to behave like a lunatic.
"Why would you want to get rid of me? I never harmed you two, even though the voices in my head told me to. I love you and Mommy. Why do you not want me? Oh my God, what is happening here? Daddy doesn't want me, Mom. That's why we have to get rid of him. And I know you love me. I know you will care for me no matter what. Let's get rid of Daddy so that we can live happily."
"No, baby, no. Daddy loves you. Daddy only needs time to understand you. None of us is ever going to get rid of you. Come here. Come to Mommy." I watched Pam take Daniel into her arms. She then brought the first aid kit and started to dress my wound. Daniel just stood there watching me with that same cold stare. After dressing my wound, Pam held my hand and said,
"Please, Andrew. He is our son. He needs us."
"Are you out of your mind? He just attacked me with a knife. Don't you?
I was broken once, but you fixed me. You gave me hope. You stood beside me till I found my courage. Daniel is broken too, and we can both fix him. We need to support him with our love and care. His first parents didn't treat him right. The second one got scared
and wanted to get rid of him. That's why he burned down their house. I mean, he was just sad. He's just a little kid.
What? He killed them?
No. I just wanted to stop them from sending me back to the orphanage. I wanted them to be my family.
At that moment, I couldn't decide what was crazier. A 5-year-old showing psychopathic traits after going through a tormented past, or my wife wanting to raise a child, ignoring his twisted mindset. I don't know what happened, but I couldn't push away Daniel anymore.
We are living in the same house as a happy family now. Daniel and I are coming close each day. But sometimes when he gets angry, he acts up, and dead birds end up in our backyard. That kid in the park fell from the wood house one day. Daniel was in there with him, but I know he didn't just do it for fun. I mean, you all can get angry, but that kid had it coming. He pushed Daniel first, right? But I'm sure he will change with time. He will change with our love and care. This is our only chance to be a happy family, and I'm not going to screw that up again. I will protect Daniel and try my best to keep him out of trouble. He is just a poor kid, but he can do better. I know he can. Right?
Rachel and I had pretty much a perfect life, at least at first. We were high school sweethearts, married at 18, good jobs after college, a house, even a little yard with a pretty white fence. We were happy, and I was head over heels for my wife. Rachel was that stereotypical small-town beauty, blonde and blue-eyed, a former cheerleader with a laugh that would lift the room. But she was kind, too. Any free time she had, she was out volunteering. I never figured out what she saw in me exactly, but I knew better than to question it. But then, right as our lives were taking off, we made a decision to start a family. That's when it all derailed. After months of trying without success, we both got tested. The doctor told Rachel that she'd never be able to conceive. The light went out of Rachel. She stopped eating, stopped sleeping. All the joy just drained out of her like color from a faded photograph. The day I found her passed out on the kitchen floor from lack of food was the day we decided to adopt. That's where Benny came in. We must have toured a dozen orphanages, but no kid ever connected with us like Benny. He was older than we thought we were looking for. The agency wasn't sure because Benny's records were lost in a fire, but they estimated he was 10 or 11 years old. He was short for his age, maybe 4'6", and so very thin. Benny had blonde hair and blue eyes, just like Rachel, and he had a quick smile that stayed with us after our first meeting like an echo. The first week after we adopted Benny was one of the best periods of my life. Rachel was bright and alive and vivid again, like I hadn't seen her in months. However, there were some oddities about Benny that soon became apparent. For one thing, he was obsessed with Rachel. While Benny was polite to me, I quickly got the impression that he considered me a third wheel in the household. He called me by my name, Frank, but he called Rachel Mommy. I could see how happy Rachel was, and I didn't have it in me to cast any shadow on her. Her and Benny spent mornings together in the kitchen baking and took long afternoon walks in the forest or spent that time sitting in the garden holding hands. I would watch them from the porch while they sat on a stone bench near the sunflowers. Benny was deeply clingy towards Rachel and would sometimes act out if she wasn't paying enough attention to him. Once, she walked outside to water the garden without him. Benny began to sob, while Rachel ran back to comfort him, reaching for his cheek to wipe his tears away. He bit her hand. I wanted to punish him, but she wouldn't let me.
She said he was just scared and sensitive. This wasn't the only incident. However, if Benny thought my wife wasn't completely focused on him, he'd yell or sulk or occasionally even pull her hair. It got to the point where I had to sit him down privately without Rachel around. I told him that if I caught him hurting Mom one more time, there would be severe consequences. I never saw him do it again, but I have a hunch Benny still lashed out when I wasn't around, and my wife just didn't tell me. Benny spent a lot of time in the bathroom every morning, and he hated to be disturbed. If I so much as knocked on the door to ask if he needed help, he'd lash out and scream that I was violating his privacy. As the weeks went on, Benny became increasingly hostile towards my presence in the house and far more clingy to Rachel. My wife seemed happy to have the boy following her heels and cuddling in bed at night, so I tried my best to adapt. One other thing about Benny that bothered me was his absolute refusal to go to the doctor. He appeared both terrified and furious about the idea of a standard checkup. Rachel eventually talked him into going for a basic visit and blood work, but only if I stayed home so they could go together. By that point, I was beginning to get frustrated enough with the boy that Rachel could sense my anger. The day of the doctor's visit, I decided I was tired of Benny's secrets. I waited for him to start his usual hour-long bathroom routine. After 30 minutes, I used a pen to open the simple pin lock on the bathroom door. I pressed it open just a few inches, not looking to catch the boy in an awkward spot, just wondering what he was up to. But what I saw shocked me. Benny was standing on a stool, leaning over the sink, looking into the mirror. Half of his face was covered in shaving cream, and he was holding one of my old-fashioned straight razors, a gift from my grandfather. When he heard the door, Benny turned, and we made eye contact. His face cycled from surprise to fear to rage all in an instant. I slammed the door as he began to shriek. I would have chalked the whole thing up to Benny just wanting to play pretend, to try out fake shaving, except for the glimpse I got of his cheek, the one that was still covered in shaving cream. I noticed a thick gray stubble in a few spots along his jaw and neck. I immediately went to find Rachel, but by the time I brought her back to the bathroom, Benny was done shaving and was curled on the floor crying. Rachel didn't believe me when I said I saw stubble. She told me Benny was probably just playing grown-up and that I should be ashamed for violating his privacy. Benny didn't talk to me for the rest of the day. Neither did Rachel. They just sat out in the garden watching bees float from flower to flower. I slept on the couch that night, and Benny and Rachel were gone to the doctor's office before I woke up. Instead of waiting around at an awkward house, I decided to take a day just for myself. I packed up my rods and tackle box and headed down to the lake for some fishing. Rachel and I had both taken a leave of absence from work to settle Benny in, but I was already counting down the days until I returned to the office. Until then, it was fine fishing weather, and I spent hours standing on a small bridge trying to entice trout. I got a call from Dr. Bradshaw around lunchtime.
"Frank, are you home?"
Bradshaw asked.
"I'm out at the lake, Doc. What's up?"
"You need to go home. Now." I was in my truck and on the road in 60 seconds. Bradshaw stayed on the line while I drove. He explained that he'd given Benny his checkup that morning and immediately saw some red flags. The boy was uncooperative and had unusually elevated vitals. Bradshaw was barely able to get blood drawn before Benny drew a tantrum. The doctor asked the lab to rush the results and couldn't believe what he saw when they came back.
"Benny isn't 10 or 11, Frank," Bradshaw told me as I raced home. "The boy is at least 45. His tests show, well, they're off the charts for a kid. I've seen similar conditions twice before. Something likely interfered with Benny's puberty and left him stuck in a child's body, despite his actual age.
45?
I asked, pulling into the driveway. At least, the doctor confirmed. And Frank, I'm calling you directly because I've already tried Rachel, and I can't reach her. The rest of Bradshaw's sentence was cut off as I left my phone in the truck and sprinted towards my house. The door was unlocked. I found Rachel and Benny in their usual spot in the garden. My screaming must have been loud enough for Bradshaw to hear on the other end of the phone, because the paramedics showed up before I could even gather myself to call them. Benny must have known that Dr. Bradshaw was onto him. His final act was to get my wife out and into the garden. Then, he took the same straight razor he had shaved with, and he slit her throat from ear to ear from behind. As she lay dying, Benny then used a razor to cut open Rachel's stomach. He climbed in as far as he could, squeezing himself in between organs and ribs and lungs. Benny got comfortable, then finally turned the razor on himself, slashing his wrists down to the bone. That's how we found them. Little Benny curled up, but protruding from Rachel's stomach, like a baby that had chewed its way out of the womb.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.